Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we're watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here in the studio with Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Stephen and I are here today in the wake of some big box office news over the weekend, which is that Jurassic World made over $500 million this weekend worldwide.
More than 200 in the U.S. alone. Which is bonkers.
Yeah. So this movie, Jurassic World, is about
dinosaurs.
Yes, it's about dinosaurs. It is set in the kind of sequel to the original theme park,
yes.
I guess, which is an island. There's now a gigantic theme park. There is a new creature that they have created that is too big and too menacing. and we begin with they're getting ready to kind of unveil this new creature, which I think they say is sponsored by Verizon Wireless.
Verizon Wireless presents the Indominus Rex.
The Indominus Rex, yes, which, as Chris Pratt's character points out, is a pretty dumb name. But, you know, so be it. Events ensue, as they always do. So, Stephen, how did you feel about this movie?
I went to the movie, kind of hot Saturday afternoon, took my 11-year-old daughter, and we had fun. I walked out of the theater thinking, that is a movie that was just good enough. And then as I thought about it more, and as I thought about what I was going to say in this discussion, almost everything that I was hashing out in my mind was negative.
Yeah, I think I had a very similar reaction in the sense that I think this movie is fine. I didn't not enjoy it. I didn't not have a good time. There are some nice compact action sequences. Mm-hmm. There are some kind of nicely staged action stuff. Some of the ideas that this movie is playing with, which are some of the same ones that this franchise has been playing mm-hmm. with from the beginning about manipulating nature. There's a great moment when a scientist who's played by B.D. Wong, an actor I just love, who's underutilized in this movie, as he is in many things.
He's underutilized but terrific in the two scenes he
there's has. A great moment in which he talks about the issue of manipulating creatures for kind of bigness and impressiveness, but you're always going to get the predatory behavior. And I think there are some very interesting applications to that idea in real life. And so I think a lot of the ideas that this movie has are good ideas. I think the movie is fun.
Yeah. And I would add, I thought there was some clever meta commentary on blockbusters and the crafting of blockbusters.
Right.
This movie, there was a self-awareness. There were several, I thought, very clever callbacks to the original Jurassic Park, although it completely forgets 2 and 3.
Right. I think for me, the hole in this movie is both of the lead characters mm-hmm. are so underbaked. I cannot remember a movie that is as kind of competent in every other regard that so thoroughly drops the ball on developing its two lead characters. Here, a Navy man played by Chris Pratt, who is consulting in the park. He works with He works with a little group of raptors. And then particularly...
Yeah, you have some thoughts.
Claire, who is played by Bryce Dallas Howard. Poor Bryce Dallas Howard. She is a woman. She works at the park. She comes in with her graduated blunt cut bob, which is the hair of mean women.
Right.
And
it's how you know she's mean.
And she's in this icy white suit.
Four-inch heels,
of course. And she goes around the park, and she's the person who kind of is supposed to be in charge, but she's dumb about everything. And she's very like, we just have to keep going. We just have to make everything bigger. This is what the audience demands. And she's kind of reciting all the dumb ideas that he's then going to come in and fix.
Mm-hmm.
But she has no personality. She seems foundationally incompetent. And then they imply all of a sudden that at some point these people have been out on a date. And
right.
I thought, why? Why would either of these people have gone out with each other? Particularly, why would he have gone out with her?
She's so
unpleasant.
I'm not sure that either of them is particularly pleasant. One of my big frustrations with the movie is that Chris Pratt is so un-Chris Pratted. He's de-Pratted. So much of why you would cast Chris Pratt in a movie, it's just that they haven't used his entire toolkit in any way. And so they're kind of both a little unpleasant.
Right. I get how Chris Pratt might have thought, I would like to try a kind of an action leading man without a wink, without falling back on, I'm always subtly undercutting my own competence and sexiness and stuff like that, as he does in Guardians and as he...
And in the Lego movie.
And in the Lego movie. I understand him wanting to do a kind of a straight on leading man. I get that. And I think he's fine at that. Yeah. I mean, he could really have used, if not humor, at least a little humility, like a little occasionally not being right about everything.
Right.
Now, let me return to a performance that I did really like, which is Jake Johnson, who is on New Girl, who plays kind of the guy back in the control room with the glasses, who I kept being fearful that he was going to get eaten. You know, it's fine. I will say, speaking of getting eaten... I will say this movie has not gotten the memo that a lot of other movies seem to have gotten, which is maybe don't build your movie around first watch hundreds of people be brutally slaughtered and then at the end we'll save the few people that you care about. And though, so it's all fine.
Yeah, and there is one particular death in this movie, you'll know it when you see it, I think, that is so spectacularly gratuitous and nightmare-inducing. You wonder, like, was there an early draft of this movie where this character was a big bad?
Yeah, or mattered more.
Or mattered more. And you're just sitting there watching it. Like, this movie hated this character a lot more than I did.
Right.
It threw off, in a way, like, in the weeks leading up to this movie, there was a lot of, there was some bad buzz around this movie. There was a sense that it was a troubled production in some way. This was one way where it felt like the movie felt unfinished, like they were scrambling to edit it at the last minute or something. This character got like a grisly, showy death in ways that is usually reserved for somebody you're supposed to be like, yeah!
It would be nice if a movie like this, because it's kind of an adventure movie, it would be nice if I could say, hey, you know what? They do their best to kind of keep the blood kind of off screen. It's clear that the big dinosaur is scary and all that stuff. It's nothing like that. It's quite gory in places. In that sense, not necessarily my speed, and maybe giving up a portion of audience that it could have had, in the sense that I would have maybe taken younger kids to, I would have been willing to take younger kids to see it if, you know.
Yeah, that particular scene was one where my daughter and I were talking afterward, and she was like, yeah, what was with that?
She's not a squeamish 11-year-old.
She's not a squeamish 11-year-old. She also spent much of the movie leaning over to me and saying, that's Andy Dwyer.
It's true.
Like, Andy Dwyer, that's like Johnny Karate.
It's true. It's true. I don't dislike this movie. I just think it's the weighted average of all movies. It's just kind of like, the only thing that I think really stands out that I would say is negative is the characterization of Claire.
Right.
Because in that character, you have every retro stereotype about this careerist woman who's incompetent with children and chilly toward men.
She needs to learn how to be worthy of being a mother. It's kind of spoken at one point.
It really is. And then there's this kind of hilarious thing that happens where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she has a totally different hairstyle. Like while she's running around in peril,
the humidity just really brings out the curl. It does it for me too.
She goes from having this like straight down bob that just makes her look evil and cold. I swear they colored her hair differently to make it lighter in front. I'm probably wrong, but it feels that way. Because her hair is suddenly so much less severe. And it just seems to happen, like, right as she's starting to, like, think about making out with him. I'm like, can we, the heels and the running in heels and the sort of, oh, my God, that is a terrible role in a movie that I think is largely fine.
Yeah, and the other hair issue I had is that the hair on Muppet Boys is unchanged in 25 years.
But you're
it's
right.
It's a little closer to like maybe it's Jonathan Taylor Thomas. It's boys have had that big mop of hair for a really long time.
I think those kids are where the movie is most aggressive about trying to capitalize on nostalgia for the first movie. What they are doing feels like a movie from the early 90s.
Yes.
The kind of adventure stuff that's happening with them. Whereas the stuff that's happening meanwhile with Prattless Pratt and and Scary Hair Lady is out of like Godzilla and kind of current monster movies and feels to me like a good quality current monster movie.
Yeah, it is just capitalizing enough on Jurassic Park nostalgia. It is just skillful enough as a monster movie. I found it perfectly engrossing while I was watching it. It is just good enough.
Yeah, and the characters are not good enough. Other than that, good enough movie. Well, full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are available every Friday from iTunes or your favorite podcast provider or at npr.org. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.